This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, originating from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Robin Dow is our producer, and your number on Friday Politics on WWNO and WRKF is 877-217-5757. That's 877-217-5757. And emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. And Roy Fletcher is here. And a bit later, we'll hear from his former colleague, Chester James Carville. But Roy Fletcher and James Carville worked together for the late, great Gus Weil many years ago. I think they got to know each other in 1979 on different sides of the governor's race. James was working for Bubba Henry, and Roy was working for Paul Hardy. And happy birthday, yep. Paul. Oh, he's 82 years old today.
Yep, yep.
October 18th. This is the 18th of October, and we're 18 days away from the election. Paul Hardy was a guy who was a fellow who had a lot of potential, ultimately became lieutenant governor, but he lost the race in 1979 to David Connor Treen, and Treen became the first governor from the Republican side in modern times since Reconstruction. And Roy handled him in 1983.
I did. Got my brains beat out.
By Edwin Edwards, yeah. Right at the peak of his powers.
At the peak.
At the peak. But the 18th of October, as Buddy Romer once told me, it was the birthday of his lieutenant governor, his political consultant, the late, great Roy Raymond Strother, your buddy.
Another protege.
And also his two ex-wives, Buddy Romer, both born on October 18th.
Wow.
And the guy, he said, who shot his hero, Lee Harvey Oswald.
Wow. So it's Oswald's birthday,
it's
too.
Oswald, huh? Number 85, and born on the same day, same year, October 18th, 1939, was the former Saints coach, Mike Ditka, who's still alive.
Yeah.
So
still rough looking.
Yeah, and he was a tough guy, as we know, and won a Super Bowl. But it's the Super Bowl of American politics. And in Louisiana, we get lathered up about presidential elections. More than 2 million people voted in the 2020 election. And then Jeff Landry wins a governor's election last year with 547,000 votes without a runoff, which tells you about 1 million people voted in the governor.
That's right,
What's the deal, Roy?
That's a good question. I'm not certain of it, but I think that... I would assume, and it has been in the past, that a governor's race would generate far more than a presidential race down here. And the truth is that over the last few elections, it's almost a disinterest in, compared to number-wise, relatively-wise, almost a disinterest in the governor's race. And particularly this past year, it just was, it was like, Landry was going to win from the beginning, and that was that. And there wasn't a whole lot of interest in it. And there wasn't a competitive. I never got a sense there was a competitive campaign. Got to have a good fight so people can get interested.
Well, this race is quite close for president, and that's the big enchilada. In Louisiana, it's not close, but our friend, you know him, Jim Kitchens, who was with us the other day.
Yeah.
He's been polling, and he's doing daily polls, and he's got more respondents than anybody else. And as he is first to mention, that doesn't necessarily mean he's got a better poll.
No.
But his numbers are encouraging for Kamala Harris nationwide. And in the as of today, these are his numbers today for what they're worth. Now, mind you, I've spoken about Louisiana and all 64 parishes have voted identically the last four presidential elections.
Yeah.
But it's generally about a 58-40 split. Well, right now in Louisiana, his poll today, Trump 49, Harris 45, which means Trump's going to win. But if Harris gets 45% of the votes, that'll be amazing in Louisiana.
Yeah, it will be. It will be. I mean, that's that poll. I mean, you got
others.
Sure. I mean, so it's but yeah, I would say 44 is a good number for her in Louisiana. And it's generally when you break it down, it's African Americans and about 18% white liberals. That's basically what it breaks down to.
They're 18% white liberal. 18% of the whites.
Whites are liberals.
Not 18% of the total.
No. 18% of the whites
are liberals. Of the whites. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. And so that kind of that kind of comes out to 43, 44. I've done that math a lot in my lifetime.
Yeah. But generally, conservatives vote in bigger numbers, but in presidential elections, not as much.
Yeah, it's a question this year, I think, Jim, is that happening? And from just from Georgia and Arizona and a couple of other states that I've been talking to and looking at, that it seems like the Republicans have figured out early voting matters.
Yeah.
They are kind of turning out better than what they normally do.
Well, it's like baseball, which you and I love. And you know, Paul Skeens this year, he overwhelmed the opposition as a rookie. But, you know, they will adjust.
They will adjust.
They will adjust.
They will adjust. But, and it's interesting. You watch it in a baseball game, you don't notice the adjustments because it's a subtle game. Mm-hmm. But in politics, the subtlety's still there, but you can notice the adjustments as Trump and Kamala have gone through this together. Right. They both sort of trying to get to the middle as much as they can.
Well, in the Real Clear Politics numbers, and that's a good site to look at what's going on, those look good right now for Donald Trump, and the Vegas odds have him as the favorite to win. But Kitchen's numbers are, as I say, encouraging for Harris. And in Arizona, which you mentioned, right now, according to his numbers, it's Kamala Harris 49.6 and Donald Trump 47.3. And Georgia is another one. That's Arizona, by the way.
Yeah.
That's Arizona. And you mentioned Georgia. I was looking for Georgia as well. And we've got a stack full of states here. But there was a surprise, and that was in Florida.
It's closer down there than what people thought.
And remember, when DeSantis won, he won by about 1,000 votes in a huge, huge state, 30 electoral votes. And, if Harris were somehow to pull out Florida, which Obama did twice, by the way,
he won
both times in Florida, it's all over. And he has her in front slightly in Florida right now. So,
And Jim polls a lot in Florida.
He lives there.
I would disagree with his number. They're not the same as I've gotten, so that's okay. It's fine. That's what happens.
Yeah, and we'll see, because if it turns out that Harris underpolls, he will be the one who is the outlier.
He
tried this out in Louisiana last year in 30 elections, and he got 29 right, and he picked Landry without a runoff, and he got the Shreveport mayor's race right, which is one that I didn't get either one of those. I thought Landry would be in a runoff. I thought he would win, of course, but I thought he would be pushed to a runoff.
I never thought he'd be in a runoff. The Shreveport mayor's race was a surprise.
That was a surprise.
Yes, it was.
A shocker.
It was a shocker. And you know what? It's really a testament to turnout. Where this whole thing now has turned to. I mean, we can argue and fight, and everybody can do all that crap now. And the arguing and fighting is important because it generates interest. But the question is, who's going to vote? And who's got an operation to get them to go vote? And who's got a message to drive them out? That's the real questions. Really is.
Well, you have acknowledged that you admire President Trump.
Yeah, right? I'm a Trump guy. I've been since 2016.
And you were once as liberal or more, even more than James Carville. What happened?
Probably so. I don't know. James pretty good, but I mean I think what happened for me was that over a period of time and feeling with candidates, I felt more comfortable with fooling. And you got to understand, my real entree into Republican politics after 83, that was with John Cade. Lord have mercy. Billy Nungay as a character. All of them were crap. But the real entree there was with Mike Foster. And he wasn't.
Well, you changed your party affiliation the same
day
he did, right?
He wasn't your typical Republican. I mean, he was different, and so that kind of started me on a trajectory. Yeah, well, I'd already started, but that really kind of finished it for me. Hey, yo, those kind of people can be Republican. I'm for that.
Well, Trump is like no one we've ever seen, nor will we have another like him, in my view, but he has made it work enough that he became the president, and his first time ever as a candidate. But Here was a good profile, front page, from a reporter for the New York Times, saying one of the more peculiar aspects of Donald Trump's political appeal is this: a lot of people are happy to vote for him because they simply do not believe he will do many of the things he says he will. The former president's talked about weaponizing the Justice Department and jailing opponents. He said he would purge the government of non-loyalists and that he would have trouble hiring anyone who admits the 2020 election was not stolen. He proposed one really violent day in which police officers could get extraordinarily rough with impunity. He's promised mass deportations, predicted it will be a bloody story, and while many of his supporters thrill at such talk, there are plenty of others who figure it's all part of an act, but they still back him.
The bloody thing was what was going to happen to the auto industry.
Okay, well, we'll get your take on whether we should take Trump literally
or figuratively.
This is Jim Inkster. It's Friday Politics on Talk Louisiana. Please drill along with us, and if you're so inclined, please give us a call at 877-217-5757. Robin Dow producing. Roy Fletcher with us for a bit longer, and then we will be, if things go according to plan, visiting with Chester James Carville, the former colleague of Roy Fletcher.
I was James's colleague.
Well, two of you were young guys on the rise, no doubt about it.
Yeah, we were. That was a fun time. Carville's a real character.
And you're both still in the game.
They are still here. We're above ground.
You're both still in the game.
Yeah.
And Roy is 73, and Carville will be 80 in a few days.
Yep.
80. Yeah. Well, anyway, Paul Annopoulos. Is Paul, good morning. Paul, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to you guys. Excuse the background noise. I'm at work right now.
You're okay.
All right. It's a pre-gone conclusion, all right. You know, we're going to vote for, you know, the state's going to vote for Trump. But in the in-state races, what's your prognostication of state rep, Cleo, District 6, such as that?
Sorry, we're talking
with Cleo
Fields.
I'm gonna be real conflicted here for you. Yeah,
well, Roy Fletcher, who is a Republican, represents Cleo Fields.
That's a longstanding thing.
Yeah, it's a longstanding thing, but to show you how Cleo Fields can bury the hatchet, Roy ran the campaign against him.
For governor
in 95.
Yeah.
But once again, did you know Cleo Fields got more votes in defeat than Jeff Landry did in
victory. And that's a testament to the turnout at the time.
Well, people were interested in governor's elections.
Yes, that's exactly right. The governor's race was be-all and end-all.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of quiet.
Well, and you have obviously a horse in the race and the front runner, and I think the conventional wisdom is that Cleo Fields will win in the primary, but
if there's appropriate turnout, that's what I keep going back to.
But even if he wins, he's probably going to be under 60% because
of the nature of the
state. And
Elbert
Guillory is going to get a whole lot of votes.
I think he'll get some, yeah. I mean, I'll
don't
be
you think
honest
he starts with a base of about 30?
No.
No?
No. I'd say more like 20.
Okay.
All right. And Cleo probably started with a base of, you know, 54. I mean, and then you fight it out.
Well, then you got 26 left. And you got a young guy who's a sharp fellow with no money, Quentin Anderson, running against Cleo Fields. He's going to get some votes.
What's his name?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. What about the mayor's race?
The mayor's race is the most peculiar thing I've ever seen.
Mayor of Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge. I mean, if you put money down.
And you've got a candidate in that race.
Yeah, but
Nathaniel.
He couldn't raise any money. I mean, they just soaked it up. But the fact my opinion is you're going to have Sid Edwards and Sharon Broom in a runoff.
That's the conventional wisdom.
Yeah, it is very conventional. It's not like I like conventional wisdom. I don't. But in that situation, I just get a sense of that's where we're headed. And if we are, then, you know, that's the best candidate for Sharon to run against.
Well,
and the best candidate for Sid to run against is Sharon. So it could end up that way, very likely will, too.
And Sid Edwards, of course, has been put in this race by Woody Jenkins, who knows things
about it.
Well,
he recruited him, Jim.
Well, he found a guy who hasn't voted in 8.5 years, and he's quite a coach. And the other day in the Advocate, Robin Fambro did a feature on him as a coach about him getting he's going to get his 200th win. Well. Yeah. There was no mention that, oh, by the way,
he's running for mayor.
And he's still coaching.
And he's still coaching.
And may continue to coach.
Well, he hadn't said he won't.
Yeah. So.
He said he'd hire a senior manager. Of course, he's, the plan of government's got to pass for that to happen, the amendments to it.
But Baton Rouge, and we will be joined by James Carville, who cut his teeth as a political consultant for Pat Screen.
Yes, absolutely.
It's changed immensely because back in the day, this was a red parish.
Yes.
And a blue state.
Yes.
And now this is John Bell got
a blue, a
John
blue
Bell,
parish
John
a
Bell
red state.
Beat David Vitter 68-32% in East Baton Rouge Parish.
And as you know, that I have dubbed Baton Rouge the Madison, Wisconsin of the South. It's fair.
So as we segue to your former colleague, Mr. Carville, you want to pick the presidential? Who do you think is going to win?
I think Trump will win, and I think he'll get right at 300 electoral votes.
Well.
Yeah, maybe a little more, but I think he'll get.
Well, James Carville, as we're about to join him, he has predicted that it will break one way or the other.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
And yesterday, in a brief conversation with him, we were talking about the 2012 race, which was dead even at this point between Romney and Obama. And Obama ended up getting 51.1 and Romney 47.2. But more importantly, Obama got 66 million votes and Romney got 61, and Obama won in the Electoral College 332 to 206.
A big victory.
So we could have something like that happen. I doubt that either candidate will get 332, but it's possible one will get 300.
And somebody will nudge over 300, but it won't be by much.
And James Carville, good morning to you. Always a honor and pleasure to talk with the most famous political consultant in American history, the pride of
absolutely
pride of Ascension Parish. Good morning, sir.
Iberville.
Well, there you go. You went to Ascension Catholic, though, right?
I did. But I'm a native of Iberville, East Iberville. Not very many of us.
Well, and you know Mr. Fletcher pretty well.
Of course, I know Mr. Fletcher very well, and I very much appreciated his comments and Tyler Bridges in the NOLA piece. I know him extremely well.
Well, Roy Fletcher, who's now a Republican, is picking Trump. And I know many of our listeners are not Trumpers, and they're saying this guy's out of his tree. And Trump is certainly competitive, shall we say. Is the election a dead heat, or do you see it moving one way or the other?
So one of the things in modern American politics that has grown really fast is what I call the prediction industry. And by the way, the pioneer of the prediction industry is from Shreveport, Charlie Cook.
Yep.
But now you have 538, you have public averages, you got the WARC, whatever, the New York, Nate Cohn, you got Harry and Alan Lichtman. And the industry has gotten so big, they're starting to fight with each other. Right, that's how big. So there's people that spend all their working time trying to predict an election. They're very, very early in my career. I asked Peter Hart, the great pollster. I said, Peter, who do you think is going to win? He said, I never spend any time thinking about who's going to win. I spend all my time thinking how we can win. It's so. And the truth of the matter is, I am not any better at this than anybody else. I think of everything that causes me to think is in North Carolina, 30 days after Nikki Haley dropped out of the race, she got 250,000 votes. Now, if anybody can tell me what, you know, of course, they're voting in a Republican primary, so they're highly like Republicans. But if 250,000 voted for a candidate who didn't spend a dollar, had dropped out of the race a month before. If Harris is going to win, she's got to win. Her key demographic, in my opinion, are white college males, because we're going to not do as well, maybe better than some people say, but we're not going to do as well with non-white men, particularly non-college. But I think where the real upside here is college white males. I'll probably get in trouble in the office saying that because it's the forgotten demographic, but I think that's the one that's going to get us there.
And it really does. We're looking at all these swing states, but if Harris carries Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, she wins, but can she do it? Can she carry those three?
So first of all, I look at the swing states. They're all plus or minus two. Polling cannot, and I'll say this, there's seven swing states. The most unlikely scenario is they break 4-3.
James Carville's predicting that one candidate will get five or six of those seven, and we'll talk more after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana Friday Politics on WRKF in Baton Rouge and WWNO in New Orleans. And your number is 877-217-5757. James Carville is with us, and he became world famous in 1992 with a big victory for Bill Clinton, who won the electoral vote 370 to 168. Carried 32 states and the District of Columbia and won the popular vote, the overall vote, by almost 6 million votes over George Bush. So those who say if Perot hadn't been in the race, I don't see how that could be, because Clinton won a landslide. And he carried, look at the swing states, he carried North Carolina. He carried Michigan, of course. Actually, he lost in North Carolina, but he in 92, but he carried Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and he also won in Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi. He lost in Mississippi, but won in Louisiana, Arkansas, and Tennessee, and in Georgia. So he actually cracked the South, which is now, as I mentioned, James, Donald Trump's 23-1 in the SEC in two races. He only lost.
The only loss was
a close one in Georgia. But right now, you're saying these swing states, which are all within the margin of error, they're likely to break one way or the other and not be a 4-3 in the point where we'll be counting votes 3 or 4 days after the election. You think they will, at the end, there will be some movement?
In the end, I don't think they break 4-3. There's generally, at the end of an election, one side tends to do better. And the rule, the first rule, everybody forgets, on election day, it has to add up to 100. Okay?
Yeah.
Then I could be 5% on the side. And, but that's, I mean, it's nothing but a feeling. I mean, I don't have a great deal of polling evidence. I mean, I see people text me and we're up another point and Pennsylvania, we down a point in Pennsylvania. So one of the things that people tend to forget is rounding. So if the pollster comes back and it's 48.5 to 47.6, or I say 48.4, 47.8, that all rounds to 48. So when you're looking at one and a half point movements, first of all, can't be that accurate. Second, you don't know what the rounding error is. And, you know, if you're a real junkie, rounding errors, are a minor thing, but it's something you pay attention to.
Those things matter in close races, no doubt, no doubt at all.
I mean, remember Jill Stein got more votes in 2016 in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin than Hillary lost by. The other thing is, she's a Russian agent. So, how can you say that, James?
And she's on the ballot. She's back on the ballot.
But go look at a photo, Jill Stein, Vladimir Putin, General Flynn. She was in Moscow in 2016 at a big banquet. Going on Russian TV, trashing the United States. Maybe she didn't get paid. I don't believe that. I don't believe it for 1 minute.
877-217-5757, and we will in just a bit hear about the documentary, which at least part of it was shown on CNN, but the world premiere is coming in New Orleans in a few days, and it features our guest, James Carville. Charles in New Roads. Quickly, Charles, you're on the air with Mr. Carville.
Just wondering if you guys had seen the new anti-Trump commercial starring Dave Bautista. I believe you can see it on YouTube. Just wondering if you'd seen it and what you thought of it.
I have not seen it. Have you, James?
Yeah, I read something about it, and I tried to pull it up, and I'm too technologically stupid to do it, but I'm so glad to hear somebody from Point Pee Parish call us. Well, my mother graduated from Partners High School.
Always good to hear him. One of my morning Louis buddies, Patrick Keller, told me he saw The Apprentice. He said it was an amazing movie.
Yes.
But
they were at Telluride with us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And everybody says it's really well done. I have not seen it.
Well, not a flattering portrayal of the former president, but
so a lot of that. So the guy that made my movie, Matt Turnhauer, was the director on Where's My Roy Cohn. A lot of The Apprentice is taken from Matt's movie.
Mm-hmm. And Roy Cohn.
It just goes to show you the creative tree in politics.
Roy Cohn's been dead now 38 years, but he was Trump's mentor, and in many ways, that says it all. This guy was a brutal operative and a brilliant operative. He was a dangerous man, wasn't he?
Also, my publisher, David Rosenthal, was his ghostwriter. So my documentarian and my public, and they all say the same thing. He was a pig of a human being. He lived like in a brownstone, and it's the stilted, as they talk about the stench and the odor, the dirty dishes, or God knows what not. I mean, just a sideball, but there was nothing likable about Roy Cohn, I can tell you.
Ellen in Covington. Ellen, you're on Talk Louisiana with James Carville. Hello.
Hello, gentlemen.
Yes.
Hello, gentlemen. First time calling. Enjoy your political intelligence. I have a hypothetical. What if Trump wins or what if Trump loses? And he starts his commotion. What do you believe?
Well, thank you, Ellen. You know, if he wins, he's going to start a lot of commotions. people got to understand what kind of commotion he's going to start. He's going to try to arrest people. He's telling you that. I might be one of them. Somebody might have to come put my bail up. If he loses, I think the country will just say, we just want to move on. And I think there would be a lot of reaction against a kind of 2020 or January 6th kind of operation, anything like that. But it's worth, you know, all I'm trying to think about is how can we win on election day? But no telling where he, and by the way, he's deteriorating right in front of your very eyes. He just one sentence has absolutely nothing to do with the next sentence. And the press, I think appropriately, covered Biden's whatever cognitive issue he had, it was all over it. And they're finally waking up to the fact that Trump, one sentence, has nothing to do with the next sentence.
And that 40-minute swaying to the music the other night was bizarre.
He didn't know where he was. I mean, I'm serious. You can go through, and I mean, you go through all of the word salad clips, but it'd be one of the things that voters should consider. And what I hate to think is we go to Election Day, and 60% of the people in the country say, well, I didn't know he was slipping in cognition, or I didn't know he was going to arrest his opponents with the U.S. military. I didn't know that he wanted to put 400% tariffs on stuff. Well, he's telling you, so we better tell you too. You better know all of this.
Gretchen in St. Francisville. Hi, Gretchen. You're on with James Carville.
Thank you so much. Oh, James, my goodness. The three recent events, I think, ought to really color people's, one of Jimmy Carter's voting, Ethel Kennedy's funeral and the Al Smith dinner. I was so appalled. Anyway, let's hope Louisianians have really good sense.
Yeah, well, at the Al Smith dinner, Trump went into combat mode, but Harris wasn't even there, which I think was a mistake. But, James, your thoughts?
Well, first of all, thank you from West Louisiana, one of my favorite towns in the whole country, not just in Louisiana.
It is a beautiful place.
So to just bring something, Mary and I were the featured speakers at the Al Smith dinner in 2010. I know what you know is, but
good Catholic, good Catholic,
like
you are.
Stockdale. I said, "Who am I? And what am I doing here?" But and a friend of mine gave me a good joke. I said that, you know, it's like 2,000 people there, and you know, the cardinal and the mayor and the whole world. And I said, "I see Mary got a Oscar de la Renta dress on," and I look inside my tux. I said, "I have an Oscar de la Renta." But, you know, I don't think that's, you know, I like them focusing on that while he's saying he's going to arrest his political opponents. I mean, you can believe in the Constitution and not go to the Al Smith dinner.
Patricia in Baton Rouge. Hello, Patricia. You're on with James.
Hey, good morning. I'm sure that you know that polling calls, they're like you get 90% hang-ups and refusals, and so you kind of wonder, do they really reflect how people are going to vote?
All right, are polls accurate? It is harder to get people to
respond. First of all, that question provoked me to say something that people that's going on inside political consulting. All right, pollsters to a person are saying we have trouble getting Trump voters on the phone. Are we getting too many Democrats? All right. Now, what does that mean? I don't know. And neither do they. One side, if you're a pessimist, you're a Republican or you're a pessimist Democrat, you said they're just lying in the gap. They don't trust anybody. They don't trust anything. They're not talking to pollsters. That's why as soon as election day comes, Trump's even going to do better than he's doing on the polls. That's an explanation. The other explanation is typically as a candidate or party becomes a little more unpopular, the members of that party are less reluctant, excited to answer the phone or talk to a pollster. That's another explanation. You can, I guess, on election night, we'll see which one was the better explanation. But in the polling missed.
Okay, we do have to take a short break, and we'll be back and spend a few more minutes with James Carville. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WWNO and WRKF. A few more minutes with James Carville. And before we take another call or two in our remaining moments, I did mention the world premiere of a major documentary, and one of the best political documentaries of all time was The War Room, and that's, of course, been more than 30 years, about the 92 campaign with Bill Clinton, featuring James and George Stephanopoulos and many others, of course. But this one will be showing at the Britannia, the movie theater that is world-renowned, made famous by Walker Percy and the moviegoer. And James, I think it's Tuesday night, isn't it?
That's correct. Tuesday at 5:30, and we're very excited, and I think we're going to have a theatrical opening in New Orleans here pretty soon, too, and announcements will be coming. And somebody, was it you that told me that
the Manship Theater,
in Baton Rouge?
The Manship Theater, and Manship. So I'm sure they will, if your schedule allows, they will make every effort to have you in Baton Rouge. I think that one is in November, so yeah. So
yeah, if I can, I'll try to come up and do like a Q&A at the end. It's a big... We go to all these big film festivals, and we'll be in Middleburg showing tomorrow. And the big thing is the director and the subject, you know, you have to sit up there and answer questions from film critics. But we're 100% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
and those people can be brutal. But
but this is only critics right now. We're 10 out of 10 of you know, superb reviews.
And this is a love letter to Louisiana, isn't it?
You know, somebody said that whatever the tourist bureau, the travel bureau, who said, I ought to pay for this movie. And the guy is a first-rate director. I mean, he just is. And they had the best camera. There's a lot of talent. And one of the things that the director said, that we really have a talented crew of kind of film infrastructure in South Louisiana. He said it's as good as it is in California. The audio people and the lighting people and, you know, makeup and all the other people go with something like this. And, it's Louisiana comes out of here looking pretty good.
Well, Robin Dow says we got time for one caller for James, and unfortunately we can't get to all of you, but I'm sure we'll be calling on Mr. Carville again soon. James in Metairie. James, you've been waiting the longest, and you have the floor, James.
Hi, Jim. Thank you so much. And good morning to you, Jim, and to your guests. The other day, I saw something on TV the other day concerning polls, and especially biased polls. And a phenomenon this guy was talking about was something called a bandwagon effect in polling an election. Undecided see one candidate's leading in some of these biased polls, be influenced by them, and decide to vote for the person they believe will be the winner and not for a person they believe will lose the election.
All right, is that real, James Carville?
Well, the Republicans apparently thought it was, because they put a couple of ringers in the poll averages in 2022, which led some people to conclude that it was going to be a tsunami wave Republican year. I would look at the – first of all, if you're a top – if you're Marist or Quinnipiac or ABC News or Washington Post, or you have no interest in getting it wrong. That's the idea that they're going to report a poll that says something it doesn't say for some domino effect. I can very comfortably tell you that that's not the case. Now, it could be wrong. That's a real possibility. And they're taking so many steps to be sure that all possible Trump voters are counted. Whether or not they're successful, we'll know. But when I look at the poll averages, just look at the brand names that you've heard of. And if you see some company like Trafalgar that you never heard of, there's a reason you never heard of it. Mm-hmm. And it was just what we see now in the betting markets. There's a crypto market that one guy comes in and bets, and they drive the odds on Trump up. The theory being that if people see that there's this cascading effect that our friend from Metairie that called in. And the question is quite pertinent, and a lot of people are talking about it, but pick you some kind of polls you heard of and kind of stick with them.
James Carville, thank you, sir. See you soon.
You bet.
We're joined in our remaining moments by Greg LaRose, the editor of the Louisiana Illuminator, and Brooke Thorington, Capitol reporter for WRKF and WWNO. And Greg had a commentary this week that I thought was right on about Jeff Landry. He writes that Governor Landry is as pragmatic as much as he's MAGA motivated. The governor has been very close to the former president, Greg, but he has made moves that are not out of the playbook for the MAGA people. Your thoughts about how he's gotten away with it to this point?
Yeah, I think what stands out to me in most recent weeks, Jim, is that his administration is going to rely on the renewal of a 0.45% portion of the state sales tax to buttress his plan to install a flat income tax for individuals and for corporations. And the long-term intent is to do away with the income tax altogether. Now, let's rewind to back during when Bobby Jindal was in charge and his fealty to Grover Norquist, there wouldn't have been any consideration of the renewal of a tax, much less, you know, any new taxes. So that alone, I think, shows that while on the surface, the governor is certainly painting himself as a tried and true Donald Trump supporter, just from the functions of running state government and keeping, the fiscal ship afloat, he's willing to stay the course with the sales tax, at least.
Brooke, as far as the governor and his association with the former president, that's well known, and he has made it known for whom he supports. But it's been rather quiet in the last few weeks. Our U.S. Senate delegation, in particular Bill Cassidy, who voted to impeach Donald Trump, he's really quiet, but he's not saying anything bad about Donald Trump either. Your thoughts?
I think it'll be interesting. He might just stay silent. You know, just to kind of, so we don't have the finger pointed at him either way. So I think he might just stay silent. But, you know, we only got a few more weeks, so we'll see what's happening. And if you're hearing a lot of background noise, it's because I'm down at State Archives here for the first day of early voting, and I have never seen a line like this. And they said folks were here before 8:30. Raring to go into the door. So if you're coming down to early vote or anywhere you're going to early vote, wear comfortable shoes and bring some patience and your ID.
Okay, there you go. But it is a busy ballot, and a major election, as you note in the Illuminator, Greg, is the one for the PSC seat left vacant by Craig Green. And it is a major race. There are only five public service commissioners. They have a lot of authority and get very little publicity, relatively speaking, to say members of Congress. But as you note, it is the most important election in Louisiana that many do not know about.
I truly think that's the case. And the candidates themselves will tell you. You've got State Senator J.P. Kuthan, former State Senator Julie Quinn, and Nick Laborde, a Democrat who is the great nephew of Raymond Laborde, who was an institution for a long time in the Louisiana House, hoping to work his way into a runoff with one of the two Republicans. And yeah, when you consider the say so that the PSC has over setting utility rates for electric companies, water, and any of the services they regulate. It requires a lot of work on part of the commissioners to familiarize themselves with the industry and, you know, trying to put the consumers first, but at the same time balance the ongoing business interest that, you know, allows the utilities to remain solvent. So it's a pretty delicate walk. And for this particular race with Craig Green, who I think you could consider a moderate, whoever takes its place is likely going to be the swing vote on the commission, which is split the remaining four members, two Republicans, two Democrats.
And, Brooke, this is an odd one because the Democrat, Mr. Laborde, has been one who's been praising Craig Green, and the two Republicans have been criticizing him. That's curious.
Yeah, it was. This is kind of an odd race, and I'm gonna admit here that I consider myself an informed voter, and I had an idea of how I was going to vote in that election. And then at the press club, when we had a forum of all three, I changed my mind. So, you know, guys, do your homework, figure out who you're going to vote for. And I was impressed with some candidates that I really didn't know about. And so I highly encourage folks, be an informed voter. And you're right, this could be the sway vote, and this is something that's going to impact residents much more than what's going to happen in D.C. So
right.
We really, really should pay attention to this.
And Greg, we only have about 30 seconds, but a listener asked about the Public Defender Board rejecting Jeff Landry's pay plan, and this was Ramey Starnes, who's carrying the water for the governor and kept his job on the Board of Supervisors by doing so, the LSU Board of Supervisors. This is an interesting development.
Yeah, in that the governor and Ramey clearly wanted to have a focus on reconfiguring the salary, but it seems members of the board that oversees public defense, including those that the governor appointed, are more intent about making sure that there are enough attorneys who are staffing those offices, not really putting a priority on increasing salaries of the leaders of those offices.
Well, thank you, Greg LaRose, and thank you, Brooke Thorington. We're back next week. Until then, thanks for listening. Stay safe. Stay tuned.